essentials. If you're in the place of not having readers yet, you might be trying to sort out, like, okay, wait a minute. Am I doing the right thing? Is it going the right way? So let's just review the path to reading with Waldorf. And it really is an amazing path. So I've taken four children through it already. Every one of them was different. And Soraya will start, she has an April birthday, where she'll be 7 in April. We will start first grade in January and sort of do an altered schedule. I'm not going to use our curriculum wholly for that at this point, but I will in September. So we're actually going to just start through the letters a little bit and prime her a little bit because she's still really bouncy, really bouncy, really bouncy. So I want to save myself and her a lot of frustration. So we're going to start very slowly. Our birthdays in our home go January, March, January, June, April. So the January birthdays, never worried about. They started in September when they were going to be 7 in January. It was never a big deal, never a problem. My March birthday had a few more issues, a few more struggles. My June birthday, we started after he was fully 7. It was beautiful. It was beautiful. He still didn't start really reading until the summer between first and second grade, and we'll talk about that here in a minute. But it was beautiful to start with an older first grader. I absolutely loved it. Highly recommend it for anybody who's stressing out about having a June or July birthday and not starting at the mid-year point. I really wouldn't. I would really start when they're fully 7, because there is a lot of maturity that comes with that. And Samuel has had an amazing time with all of the grades. He's in fifth grade now, and everything has hit him perfectly. So it's about really getting them to that place. And at home, we have to do things differently than they do in the school. And we just do. And you know, the realities are different. And so we can look at the Waldorf school model and sort of think about, okay, how do we translate that at home? And then we really do have to translate it to the home. It is much different. And as a homeschooler, this is where I say, as soon as you get them reading, it frees you up a little bit. It lightens your load. It helps the stress out. So while we're not pushing in kindergarten, once first grade hits, that is absolutely my focus. And a Waldorf first grade teacher would tell you that's not our focus in first grade. You know, if they learn to read, great, that's not our focus. It is our focus at home. So if you use our curriculum, our grade one curriculum, you'll see that that's our focus. People will say to me, why is it that you don't teach a math block for a while and you just push through and teach all letters? Well, this is why. We really want to get to that place where they're reading. And those same moms that asked me that in September are freaking out in December about why their kids aren't reading yet. So I'm just telling you, go through and follow it. We do all the letters first, and then we do a math block. And it actually, we have a container story in our curriculum, so the math block blends right into the container story. But we start with those letters, and we start with the consonants first and the vowels last. And why do we do that in Waldorf? Well, there's some, you know, some reasons why we bring in those beautiful vowel sounds, and sometimes they're called angel sounds. But just the pure and simple of it, you bring in the vowels last, because then on day one of bringing in those vowels, that child is reading. They have the potential at least to read, because you've introduced all of the consonants, and here we are with the first vowel. And look, we can read Sam. We can read simple short vowel sounds. So that's what you start with those first days. But in order to get to that place, let's back up a little bit. We introduce the letters. We introduce it through a story. It's very popular to use Grimm's Fairy Tales in Waldorf, and that's what we use in our curriculum. They've been selected to match the letter. They don't have to be used that way. You can use a different one. You can use completely different stories if you hate the Grimms that much. But do not do the Grimms completely. I have huge testimony of the efficacy of Grimm's Fairy Tales. And yes, they're grim, but they are amazing balms to their soul in a very black and white way, the way they are at this age. So, you know, this is where they're at. And it's amazing when you actually feed them the nourishment that they need story-wise when they're there. The light bulbs that go off, the way that they act, the way that they interact with others, really changes from these stories. So absolutely, even if you're stressed out about the stories, I would still tell them. I would still tell them. And then we have a lot of resources about why fairy tales. And so if you need some resources on that, please just ask. I'm happy to help you with that. So you're introducing the letters through the fairy tales. And this is sort of how I do it. I do the lesson in our book. We'll do the story. And I like these. I like this book. I got this book years ago. And they have actually a deck of cards too that you can buy as well. So I use the book, just sort of sits on our bookshelf now, because we have these cards. And what I'll do is the week that we're doing, say, let's see, the letter N, this is what's on the nature table. So, I'll have them out so they can see this N in the picture. And that's what's out the week that we're doing these letters. So usually there's two, because we cover about two a week when we're working through the letters. Then say that we've done, you know, here it is December. And now when we sit down and do the lessons, if we were to be doing that today, I would gather all of the cards that we've already done. And I don't use them, I suppose it's sort of flashcardy, but it's not in a drilling sort of way. I'll get them out, I might get them out, I might have them in my lap and go, oh my goodness, do you remember when we did this one? Do you remember what sound this one makes? Which letter was this again? Oh yes, you're right, it was the letter N, and it makes that N sound. So we might go through all of the ones that we've already done and before we start the next one. That way we're keeping all of those letters fresh in our mind. And it really helps them. And I try to do it in a very playful, non-stressful way. And of course, there are going to be children, most children, maybe all children, that are going to forget. They're going to forget them, and that's okay. It is okay that they forget. You just remind them and you go through it again. Oh yeah, remember, this was N and it made this sound, like net. And then I might read that there's a little poem on the back. I might read the little poem on the back too, especially if it's one that maybe they're really struggling with. And I would say that most children have one or two or five letters that really don't click with them right away, that it takes them a while to really. So again, I review, I go through the letters, and we just sort of re-review them. And like I said, I might do the little poem on the back, but it's a very non-stressful review. It's not I can't believe you don't get this. We just did this yesterday. It's nothing like that. It's just a review of what we've done in the past, of the other letters that we've done. So then on the day that you introduce, say, A, I might get out these letters, and I might say, now let's play a game. What can we read? Because I'll say, we'll get finished with the A lesson. I'll go, you know, we're reading now. And they'll be like, oh, what? We're reading now? Now, because most kids are super dang excited to read. Like Soraya told me yesterday, we're sitting in church. She's so silly. We're sitting in church, and it's a Christmas cantata that we have at our church. And so it's not like church time, it's after church, and we're sitting there, and she's bored out of her skull because, you know, I didn't bring anything for her, because I'm thinking, we're at the dang cantata. You're going to, like, pay attention and listen to the Christmas music, right? No, apparently not. So she gets out the hymn book, and she's got it in her lap. She's looking at it, and she's got this funky, like, weird grin on her face. I just am looking at her, paying attention to the cantata, and she's going through and pointing at all the page numbers and counting them, doing fairly good at that. And then she says to me, Mommy, you know, when I can read, I'll be able to sing with you. I just start laughing because it's true. They get really excited to read. So So when you get to that first day where you finish the vowel, the very first vowel, dang it, you better get out every pull out all the stops and have a good time with every short vowel A sound that you can. Now, so like I said, that's how I use these cards. And if you make your own, I only have these because it seems like there was a sale, or it might have been an impulse buy when I was at the Rudolph Steiner College bookstore. That's probably what it was. I went, there's cards? Oh, I have to have these cards. So it was definitely an impulse buy, but you can for sure. And so I didn't have them until like Samuel. Before then, I made my own. But I would pull them all out, and I would take the A sound and pull together some other letters and go, let's practice this one and have a good time with it. Stop making it so stressful. Part of the reading struggles that moms have is, mom, stop making it stressful. Have a good time with it. And don't freak out if they're not getting it at the very beginning. So again, if at first they're going to sound like n-ad, nad, nad, nat, nat. It's going to sound like that. That's what sounding out's all about. That's the path. So set these down. So you're on this like path, you're on this journey, and it's going to take them practice before they can blend those sounds together. So then, you don't just stop the lesson there. Once you've introduced all the letters, you need to sit down for 20 minutes a day on the couch every day, even Sunday, every day. Saturday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, all of the days on the couch, the two of you, with something very simple to read, and you're practicing every day. So those simple things, in Waldorf Land, we usually make our own readers, and we actually, I know we have a video on that because I saw it the other day, on making your own readers. And so what I did when we did it with Ellie, and I actually did it with Sam too, I would write out the, so we sort of did the, if you've read the 7-Year-Old Wonder Book where the fairies leave out a picture and there's writing. So we did the same sort of thing. So I would do the writing the night before and leave it out for her. And the next day, and it was all words that she knew. So, I mean, it was helpful that her brother's name was Sam and that was a short vowel sound. And so we did all of these, and we had a cat, so that was easy, right? So I did all of these sentences to help build her in the direction that she needed to go with short vowel sounds. And so I would write it and she would come in the next day and she would read it and then she would draw the picture of what it is that the sentence said. And so we sort of did this, and I actually sort of wrote it all out in advance so that I could just give her bite-sized pieces every day, and I didn't have to come up with it the night before because I had planned that way so that I'm not caught with my pants down. Okay, so Kimberly, I'm answering some questions here. Yes, secret messages. Yes, not a question, a comment for sure. Kimberly says, yes, writing it out, things as he could read was a special seat. It helps. It helps because it's like this fun little thing that they get to decode, and they're very excited about this. We're the only ones stressed out about this. We're going to stress them out if we don't chill out a little bit and let them have fun with this. This is a rite of passage. It is a new step. It is someplace that they can never come back from. So don't muck it up. Have a good time with it. Go slow and really take the time that they need. So this is the truth. Most first graders will have all of the letters introduced to them by the end of the year and will understand the short vowel sounds. They may not remember everything. I was trying to think about my kids. Harry read early. He has ASD. That doesn't count because he was decoding things when he was 5. Jacob refused to do anything with regards to letters until right before he turned 7. And then he says to my husband, my mom won't teach me how to read. And my husband says, oh, yes, she will. So we sat down and he read in 10 minutes because we'd been doing all of this work. So even though he didn't want to have anything to do with the letter, we did the stories and I might say the letter sound and that was about it. But when he was 7, he was ready and he read really fast. Eleanor, she struggled even through second grade. She struggled. And so, but she's probably my best reader now. She's reading the Da Vinci Code right now. She's like, She's in 11th grade, never slowed her down. She didn't read until, like I said, I mean, she read, but it was very slow and going. Very slow and going. She had the basics down, but it was a struggle for her. So one of the things, if you are a religiously minded family, one of the things that we do that I think helps immensely when they're starting to read is to read straight from scripture. Not the new translated version. Try King James. It's slow, but it helps them to hear the these and the thous and the yeas and the ye and the all of those little ways that vowels are used in old language. It helps them. So the other thing that we use are, I love these readers they're by Shelley Dividow, and they are perfect. I couldn't write something better, so I haven't, because they're amazing. So there's a set of them, and for some reason I can't find the rest of them. Some little person in my house has squirreled them away, or I lent them to somebody. But this one is Ned and Fred. So this is probably, I think this might be number three in the series. The very first one though is Sam Cat and Nat Rat, and it's perfect because it's all about Sam Cat and Nat Rat. Kelly says I have them. You want this one too, honey? I can send you this one. Sorry. I don't know how I have this one. And anyway. So the first one, Sam Cat and Nat Rat, is just about this cat and this rat. And it's a very simple story. Very, very simple story. But it's perfect for like really getting through those very first vowel sounds. And the sense of accomplishment when they've read their first little book is huge. Huge, like it, and they get the smile on their face. So I would not suggest that you sit down on day one and make them read this whole book. We sit down and we might go through, we might go through one or two pages, and it might take us 20 minutes to get through one or two pages. The biggest suggestion I can give you is to put your patience hat on and just take a deep breath. This is going to probably be harder than teaching them to knit. For some kids. For other kids, they might blaze through it. But in general, you might need to really take a deep breath and check on yourself. You want to make sure that you are not causing more stress to the situation. So, if you need to say, honey, I need to go spend 3 minutes alone in the bathroom, go do it. Eat your chocolate, take a deep breath. Get your happy mom face on and then come back. If you've got a lot of little ones in the mix and they're super disruptive, then those are the things that I work on when I go, all right, so we've got some stuff that Sammy and I need to do. So you can sit here and listen to us very carefully and quietly, or would you like to play with Play-Doh? And there are things that I keep in my mom toolbox that only come out when I absolutely need them to be engaged. And so if you don't have those things in your toolbox, get them. Take toys that are great fun for them, put it away and say, we're going to only have this out. One of the things that I did with Soraya was she has this love for markers. My other kids didn't have that. So why does Soraya love markers? I get this question all the time. What do I do with my kid that likes markers? I do not allow her to use markers during school time because that's my time to teach her. But any other time, I will allow markers. But when she was in that space of where she was really little and I needed some time with Sam, I would allow her to use the markers. She had to stand in a closed space because, of course, I didn't want marker everywhere. But there were things like that that I allowed her to do while I was working with Sam that then gave me the space that I needed to work with Sam. Okay, so Stephanie is talking about her son that's challenging. And I'm glad you haven't started. He only wants to do his own thing. So this is what I'm going to tell you with regards to the child that wants to do their own thing. And we have a video on working with difficult children, so you might want to watch that. But here's what I say. I know you love to do your own thing, but this is school. And mom's your teacher. We're going to do it my way. When we're all done with school, you are welcome to do whatever you'd like. You can draw whenever you'd like. You can paint whenever you'd like. But during school, we're going to do this painting. Why are we doing this painting? Because I need to teach you. And if you don't know how to do it because you've never painted before, or you've never painted this one mountain, or you've never painted this tree, then we need to do it together. So with the mom that has a challenging child, things I'm going to say to you are, make sure your planning is airtight. And if this child is choleric and you are anything but that, then you need to find your choleric hat and put it on. And you need to remember that a choleric will only yield to another choleric that they trust. So you need to make sure that they trust you. So your plans had better be completely done. Your prop drawings had better be completely done. And you better be ready to teach that lesson, that art lesson, or whatever lesson it might be. They need to trust you. All children need to trust you, but choleric children especially need to trust you. Because if they don't trust you, if you have lost that trust, or they do not believe that you will be able to help them, teach them, whatever, then guess what? You are going to struggle the entire time. Now, my son Jacob, who I did struggle with very much so in schooling, it was never about trust. It was never about, because he was a hard kid. And I sort of laugh about that because he's so funny now. But he was a hard kid, but it was never about, I know it all, so I'm not going to, I want to do my own thing. It was never about that. It was more about, do I have to do school? Yes, I do have to do school. So remember that you need to set up from the very beginning, from day one in first grade, you need to set up who the authority is. And I know I will have moms say, but that's not what I want in my homeschool. Sorry, if you're using Steiner and you believe in this method, you need to really think about how development works. And these children need to know who's in charge. And it is okay. It is not some ugly authoritarian yuckiness. It is, my mom knows what she's doing, so I'm going to follow her. That's what that's all about. So there's these books. And then there's these fun little books, too, that I found years ago at Barnes & Noble. And I'm sort of laughing because so this one's called Worm Builds. And so this is definitely not a first. This is a after you've gotten through, and you, because these are great because these go through the blends, the Shelley Dividell ones. They go through some word blends. Like this book is Ned and Fred. Fred. So you have to think about this at the first blends. So this has some great blends in it. Yes. Yes, Stephanie. Sorry, I was reading what it says. Yes, you know what you're doing. But you have to know what you're doing. Otherwise, they won't yield to you. They'll be like, this lady does not know her stuff. Insert word other than stuff there if you'd like. But anyway, so these are great. These are definitely after you've gotten through Shelley Dividell. Because they're so small, they come in a pack of like six. I'm not so sure that I would say yes, run out and buy them. I mean, they're fun, and I'm trying to remember. I've had them for a long time. I don't think I had them with Jacob, but I definitely had them with Ellie. These are fun, though, because they're silly. So this is Worm Builds. And it says Worm Builds a Tower. So you're working on bigger words. You know, so you have the blends here with the UI for builds, and you have the ER sound. So anyway, Worm Builds a Tower. Frog Knocks It Down. Worm Builds a Tower. Turtle Knocks It Down. Worm Builds a Tower. Rat Knocks It Down. Worm Uses Glue. That's the best part of the whole book. Worm Uses Glue. I'm like, thank you, Worm, for getting a brain. And then it says, Worm's Tower Stays Up. So these are kind of just because they're short, super short. Once they're reading, it's fun for them to have that sense of accomplishment for this bit. So these were, I was laughing because this one, we used to have a rabbit that somehow got a hold of this book. These are just called Brand New Readers. And it says learn more at brandnewreaders.com. So I think it's funny because it says Brand New Readers. It's really not Brand New Readers. This is probably like been reading for a month kind of thing. Jenny says, when doing blends, my daughter gets them backwards. Should I go back to the basics again? No, I would just, I spend a lot of time reviewing. So when we're reading, after you've introduced everything and you are definitely on the reading trail, I take notice of which words are a struggle. One thing that I like about these ones by Shelley Dividell, I'm going to show you, is in the back of every book, there's vowel sounds review, and there's also sight words that are introduced in the book. And so I like these because When I need to build word lists for them, and I'll do that if there's words that they're struggling with, and there's always words, all children have words that they struggle with, I'll use these to build those word lists. And I might make a list of those words and sort of put them on the board or something, so, as words that I know that they're struggling with. And then I try to use those words a lot. I use them in their writing, because writing begets reading. So writing comes before reading in the Waldorf world. And it's that action, that motion of doing something that was once very abstract and now isn't. So you're putting those pieces together. And so writing should definitely come first. So I would, any words that your daughter's having trouble with, I would make a list of them and try to use them in your writing practice. You know, with your summaries, I would try to practice them in other ways and come up with silly sentences. Whenever we have spelling issues, that's what we do. So people ask me all the time, well, what about spelling? Well, spelling comes from reading and good spelling in general. Unless you've got a child that maybe is on the spectrum or is having some hearing difficulties, generally spelling sorts itself out. And I mean really sorts itself out. I've never done a spelling list. We've never done spelling quizzes. We've never done anything like that. So when a mom says to me, you don't do this, I go, no, I don't, because we go through and I pay attention to what words they're struggling with. If it's a would, could, should issue, then, you know, those words, then we'll use those words a lot. But it's by paying attention to what it is that they're struggling with. Usually there's a pattern. There's generally a pattern in there's something they're not hearing in, if it's a spelling issue, there's something they're not hearing in the words, or they're going too fast. So, you know, I have the one child that is going super fast, and, you know, he might be racing through and he's not hearing. Or my son that has autism spectrum disorder, he would like get the first three letters and think that he had the whole word. So I had to slow him down and go, okay, dude, even though you taught yourself to read when you're 5 and a half, we're going to slow down, because there are definitely things that handicapped him because he didn't have that maturity that we needed to slow back down. So I'm going to answer a question here. I will be right back here. Let's see. Yes, there definitely are a lot of readers out there. I'm answering actually a message really quick. I would be careful with when you go reader shopping. Like I said, I like the Shelley Dividell ones, but if you're gonna go reader shopping, and I'm pretty sure that Pamela over at Meadow Sweet Naturals has the Shelley Dividell ones. But again, if you're gonna go reader shopping, read the whole thing before you bring it to your child. There are a lot of readers that are in the early easy reader place that are not easy readers. I don't want you to frustrate your children. Those books, before these came out, like years ago, like with Harry, we used Bob books. Harry and Jacob both, we use those. And Bob books are available at most libraries. They're really not very pleasing to look at because they're just stick people. But they get the job done. So if you don't have in your budget at all for the Shelley Dividell books, I would hop over there and grab those Bob books, and they come in a sequence too. So they start really early, and they usually come in like a pack of 10, I think. And then you go through, and they're short. They're really short. So they're like this in that way. But the reason why I really like the Shelley Dividell ones is one, there's nice pictures in them. So it's not, I will show you. They're not color pictures. They're not stick people either. So there are nice drawings in them. So that, I do think that aesthetics is important. And I like that the word lists are at the end and that they're progressive. By the time you're done with, there's I think 5 or 6 of these. By the time you're done with this set, then you are ready for the next step. Frog and Toad. This will still be a little bit of a struggle. So we're still reading out loud. And we're reading out loud for 20 minutes a day. We're reading out loud for 20 minutes a day until they don't stumble in a word in a book like this. And I mean no stumbling. Like they read through everything. They might pause, sound something out, but they're not stumbling. Mom, I need help. That kind of thing. So what I do when we do our reading practice is I grab my knitting needles and I sit and I work on my knitting project while they're reading to me. Because then I'm right there, I'm engaged with them, I'm not off doing something else, I'm not tempted to get my phone out, I'm not tempted to be on the computer. excuse me. And again, this is a time when I've got other kids busy. Maybe other kids are sitting there doing handwork with me, or like I said, we've got Play-Doh out or whatever it needs to be, or I'm nursing a baby. I taught reading so many times, nursing a baby. So you really just want to have them next to you. So Melanie asks, is this second grade work? No. It depends on where your child is. For many children, it will be the summer between first and second grade. Many children will get all the way through the Shelley Dividal books by the end of first grade. Some children won't. Some children will really still be struggling. Like I said, out of the four that I've taught in my home to read, some of them have struggled deep into second grade. Ellie did, and like I said, she probably reads more books, well, between her and Sam. Those two are really good readers. My big boys, they read, and they read. I mean, it's not like they can't read, but they're not like sit me down with the book readers. And so Ellie, who struggled the most, which I find really interesting, is probably one of the, like, she'll grab a novel and read it. Samuel reads crazy. And so I want to talk about Samuel really fast. So he was my later first grader. So he was 7 and 3 months when we started first grade. And he was very much stumbling by the end of first grade. And but we had gotten through all the letters, we were doing the sounds, but it was not like, was not excited about it. It was like drudgery for him. He's phlegmatic in temperament. So I sort of expected that a little bit. It wasn't until he saw this Star Wars book that he had in his head that he needed to read. And I just looked at him and said, honey, okay, but I gotta tell you, you can't read that book by reading Ned and Fred. You can't. You're just gonna have to push through that. So that was the summer between first and second grade. And we blew through Frog and Toad. We blew through Hay for My Ox. We blew through all of these other books. And guess what? He forgot about the Star Wars book and decided to read something else instead. But it was the incentive that he needed. He was really excited about it. And even though in the back of my head I'm thinking, I really don't want him to read that book yet because it's not like age appropriate for him. I held my tongue, which is something I probably wouldn't have done when I was a younger mom with my other boys. I held my tongue and I thought, well, I'm just going to see if he can do it. Because if he can do it, then we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. And so, like I said, he said, well, what do I have to do? What do I have? Because he very motivated by, like, tell me what I have to do and I'll do it. And I just said, well, you have to up your reading. You've got to be reading 30 minutes a day by yourself, not with me. And you need to start reading in your head. Excuse me. And so he was like, done. So it took a couple of months, but man, then he was reading by himself, and then he picked up all these other books. And like I said, he forgot about the Star Wars book because there was so much age-appropriate material available to him, chapter book-wise, as this new reader, that he was super excited about that, and he forgot about the Star Wars book. And so, yeah, so that's sort of been my journey with all of my children. We've had, like I said, Harry read really early. He's on the spectrum, so I kind of don't count him in that way, just because sometimes when you have a kid on the spectrum, there's no stopping them. Depends on how far down the autism spectrum they are. There's no stopping them. They're going to decode it, and he was very much Mr. Decoding. So he did decode that early, but he suffered for it. I do believe that his coordination, and we really had to work on that. He was reading and writing before he could ride a bike, and there were things that were a struggle for him because he was so in his head. So definitely, like with Soraya, I have intentionally, people will say, why are you holding it back? I have my reasons, and this is one of them. I have intentionally kept her out of her head and into her body as much as possible because I watched it with my son. And I watched how much he struggled because I did not work harder to do that. So if I could go back and say anything to myself then, I would have said, let's get his body moving more. Let's see, Jenny says, once they're comfortable with reading, any recommendations on what novels you introduce? I like, go into the kids section, into the chapter books, pay attention to what they are. I don't allow things like Captain Underpants to come home. I'm really careful about garbage, and I know Don't yell at me if you love those books, but I struggle with those sorts of books because it's not stuff I would read aloud. So I really work on books that are good for them to read. So I would say first books, I liked the My Father's Dragon series. So we had read them, done them as read alouds, and then Sam read them himself and he loved that. Yes, Kimberly says Meadow Sweet Naturals has a great selection of early chapter books. They do. And actually, there is a second set of books, and I never got them. I'll probably get them with Soraya, that Shelley Dividal puts out that's longer about the characters in these books. So this is about Ned and Fred. So they're longer pieces. They're longer books. And so I would definitely look into those. Those are great, like, first-time chapter books. But then again, like I said, we went through things that we enjoyed together. We enjoyed Thornton Burgess. They love Thornton Burgess. Yes, Kimberly asks, the mystery series. Yes, like the pet series. Like I said, I don't have them. So if somebody's got the title and want to pop them into the comments, that would be great. But we did, they read Thornton Burgess. They read all the Frog and Toad. Like, this is a Frog and Toad anthology. There's Frog and Toad anthology, there's Mouse Soup, there's a bunch of them. The Adventures of Little Bear, we read all of those. Those are really good because they use words like throughout and through, and words that a lot of children stumble on in the very beginning. I was looking here to see what other words that... those are the ones that sort of stuck out in my head. Words that are easy for them to stumble on. And so, anyways, I would start with those sorts of classic books before jumping into anything new. I would say shortly after Sam was able to read, I was trying to think of what he went to next. He's read, you know, he's in fifth grade. He's read a good portion of Harry Potter and those sorts of things, but I waited until he was like 10 before he, 9 before he started those. Just look at what they're reading and allow them a little more freedom at the library and encourage them. If you have books that you enjoyed when you were a young child, you know, like I remember reading Super Fudge, I think I was in fourth or fifth grade. But get excited with them. Have books that, like I said, that maybe you read when you were a child. Shell says, my girls love the Cobble Street Cousins series. Yes, I remember that series, but we didn't read them. There was also like, it was a babysitter, but it wasn't Babysitter's Club. Cause that I think is too, I can't remember. There was another one on babysitting. There was one, so many good chapter books out there. I'm going to grab some more questions. My first grader knows some of the sounds and is guessing the rest of the words. Example. Okay, so I would, excuse me, it is absolutely normal. It's absolutely normal for them to rush through it, but I slow them down, especially if they're making that mistake a lot. And I might hold their hands and look in their eyes and say, listen, I love you, and I know you're really excited about this journey, but we need to slow down because we're getting a lot of words wrong, and I want to teach you properly because that's my job as your mom. And then I go, let's try again. And so then if they are saying Sam instead of sat, I might go, let's go back and let's look at all the letters here. What letters do you see? Oh, do you see that it's a T at the end? So what sound does that make? Oh, yes, you remember it makes a T sound. So let's read that again. Sat. And then go through it again. So you are going to have to put on your patience hat because that might be really frustrating for the first couple of weeks. But see, what happens is your child then knows you're not going to let up. You're going to make them do it over and over and over again. And so once they realize, hey, this lady means business and she's not just going to let me skirt by, I'm going to have to sort of go through it all, then just take your time and go through it. We get some more comments here. Casey, my 5-year-old refuses to ride a bike or a tricycle and barely touches a scooter. He can catch and throw a ball. He never wants to build anything. I do have concerns about later. You know, Casey, I don't know that I would worry. Harry was, So, okay, a couple of things with regards to a bike. Riding a bike is such like it's like this rite of passage, you know? It's like this Rubicon that they cross. But we live in a place now where my kids can't ride bikes. I mean, they have scooters and they have skates and they have, so I focus on other like gross motor stuff, other coordination stuff. A bike is good because you've got this going and they have to learn to steer. So, you know, that's a good one for working up. But if he is just K1, I wouldn't stress about it. I was thinking back when Soraya was K1 around that time, and she was like, I want a bike. But then we went to Toys R Us to look at bikes, and she couldn't make them go forward. She kept like, you know, get those the kid bikes, the brakes are in the back. And so it was like this process of, so we started with a trike and she rode that for a while and it was this process and now she's on a scooter. So I don't think I would stress a whole lot. I would keep offering, but all the other gross motor crossing stuff that you can do is really good. I'm not sure that I would really worry. One thing that I would say that I think helps is playground time. And when I say that, I mean like all the climbing that they do on the playground. And then if you can get them to do the monkey bars, teaching them how to do that, I think that that's super helpful too. And it gets all of that, the same sort of movement going that you do on a bike. Okay. I know you get frustrated, Melanie. You have to stop getting frustrated. Get some chocolate in your house or something. Something that you love, Melanie, that you can go and have in the bathroom all by yourself before you start reading lessons. Just say, oh, Mommy, I'll be back. See, I was good with that until my kids found my chocolate stash. And now they know. So I don't hide chocolate in the bathroom anymore. Kimberly says, I play a game. I read and make a little mistake. Not reading carefully. Yes. I do that too. Making mistakes is a good way. So even though you want them to trust you, and they trust their authority, I absolutely still make mistakes on purpose. And it depends on the child. It depends on the child. As far as the degree to those mistakes, I go, dang it, I messed that up. Will you help me out? Let's work on that together. Another thing that I will do if it's a longer chapter book or a longer book like this, and they're like, oh my gosh, this book is so giant. Because this is like a compilation. This is me being lazy and not wanting to have 10 books in my house. They absolutely come smaller. But one of the things that I'll do is say, you read a page and I'll read a page. And then we sort of do that when they're in that early stage of you reading and then me reading and then you reading and then me reading. And it's super helpful. I do that even with main lesson work, like Sam. Like there's some stuff now that in 5th grade that you know that I want. There's stories that I want to get to him, and I'm just not going to sit and read the whole story. I mean, sometimes I do, but we sort of sit and swap, and that's a lot of fun for them. And that's a good bonding time. You know, I think that when you are struggling with school in general, I want you to step back and stop seeing it as drudgery. When you see it as drudgery, you're not going to have fun. And those are the moms that message me and say, I am burned out. I go, why are you burned out? Let's step back and look at why you're burned out. How was your planning? Did you have it in place? How is your alone time? Are you getting enough? If you're not, and I get the, oh, I'm a single mom and I don't have any time to myself. Guess what? Get bedtime in check and then you'll have some time to yourself. Absolutely, getting rising and sleep times down will help you tremendously. I was a single mom for a time. I get that. I was a single mom with 3 busy children, and at the time they were 4, 6, and 8, and they kicked my butt. They kicked my butt, and I remember like my bones hurting, and I was in my early 30s. I remember my bones hurting when I laid down at night. And so I get the being completely exhausted, but if I hadn't had them on a good sleep schedule, I would have been a mess because they wouldn't have had any alone time. I lived in a place where, you know, I didn't have any family support. My parents lived 3 hours away. I had a friend who had just gone through a divorce, and while she was a great friend, she was not in a position. She was also a single mom with 3 kids. She was not in a position to help me. So I was by myself. I get it. I was exhausted and by myself. I had to create the me time. Sometimes I got time when they were with their dad, but that was me like working so that before I owned Waldorf Essentials, we used to make gnomes and So if you have math gnomes that we made years and years ago, those were, you know, that was how I supported myself for a long time in the handwork business. And so while they were gone with their dad, I was working. And it, while it was meditative and I had alone time, it was not restorative alone time that I needed. And so I had to create that space and create that time. So stop telling yourself that you don't have the time. You have to reorder your schedule, reorder your rhythm so that you have the time alone to yourself. So once you have that time alone, you know, really meditate on that child that's learning to read and just really think about, okay, what are Johnny's needs? And just sit there with it. Think about the last few conflicts you had and just sit with it. Think about what was going leading up to it. Did he have enough to eat? Did he have enough sleep? On days when kids are not their best, we still do some school. But I do not, I would rather them run and run and run and run and get all of that angst out than sit cooped up in the house with me. So I build those days into our homeschool schedule because I really want to make sure that we have enough time for that, that we have made enough space and that I'm teaching them to have healthy habits when it comes to not feeling right for the day or not. And of course, you know, everybody could say, well, there's something wrong every day. So I definitely evaluate that. It's always my idea, not their idea. And I'm always sort of in the space of releasing, like, you know what, let's go to the beach today and walk in the sand and try to get to feeling better. And then we'll come home and do some handwork. So, you know, I try to make sure that I know what their needs are. I'm meditating on them on a regular basis, and that helps you so much with the struggles that they're having. The road to reading, you know, you kind of have to think about it like potty training. It's this long process. You know, a child is not completely potty trained until they can wipe their own hiney, and that often doesn't happen until they're 5 or 6. Sometimes earlier, sometimes later. So, and some kids are still having accidents when they're 10. So, you know, you have to look at that road to reading the same way. That road to reading has all of these little signposts where you're making progress. But you know what? I'm 44 years old and sometimes I have to sound out a word and it's okay because there are big words. I might look at it and go, and now that, you know, I'm really working on my German, sounding out things like crazy. And that's a whole different way to go about it. So if you are a family that's sort of teaching two languages, get your main language down first and then go to the next one. Okay, I'm reading more comments. How about the first grader that's not interested in reading? Yes. So, you know, I sort of talked about that a little bit in the beginning. I had a son who was, I sort of made it sound like he's died. He's not. He's actually coming here tomorrow. He's 18 now. But when he was, he has a March birthday, and I only started him when I did because my ex-husband was like, so we just did it our way. And I had to go really slow, and he did not want to, it's okay, don't worry about tuning in, it's no big deal. He did not want to read at all. He didn't want to talk about reading. He didn't want to discuss it. He didn't want to talk about letters. So I did the stories. We did the stories every day, and I would sneak in letters here and there. He would do his writing, and little did he know that that had a lot to do with reading. We did our form drawing. We did those things. He did summaries. We talked about those things. But it wasn't until right before he turned 7 that we had been in church, and he was like frustrated at the hymn book, and we were on our way walking home, and he turned to my husband and said, "My mom won't teach me to read." My husband said, "Oh yes, she will." And so we did. We came home, we sat down, and he was reading like that, like really fast, because he was primed and he was ready. And so I would keep at it and keep going. And when you get to something that really makes them excited, and like I said, for Sam it was he wanted to read this book. Then you might have to say, okay, honey, we're going to have to take some time here. You're going to have to settle down, and we're going to have to take some time here and walk through it, because that's the only way we're going to get there. It also helps when you relay struggle to them that you've had. And so I might say, you know, when I started X, Y, and Z, it was hard for me. And just it just a short little snippet. So see, now that I've been working at it, it's not so hard for me anymore. I relay those kinds of things to them. I relay those, especially when it comes to like knitting and those things that happen we do in first grade. You know, I'll talk about my first projects and how frustrated I was and how I needed help. And my kids love it when I talk about the sweater that I was trying to make for Harry that I loved, that I was so proud of. And I got to, it was like this long, and I noticed that down here there was this giant hole where I had dropped a stitch. So I take it to the lady at the yarn store, and I'm like, can you help me fix this? She frogged the whole thing. Then she sat there, fixed my stitch, and re-knitted for me, because she was lightning fast, re-knitted for me, and helped me see my error, helped me see how to fix it, all of those things. And so sometimes we mess up, and that's okay, and that's what we have to sort of get across to them, but in a more way of we're the authority, and this is how we learned kind of thing, and it's a process, and some kids will bug you every day about whether or not they do have to do school, and some kids are just going to be eager, ready to learn, and all kids are different. So you know, this is a journey. Enjoy it. Try not to be frustrated. Try to take a deep breath. Make sure that you've got your own, you've got your own self-care in a good place, and spend some time meditating on your child, because that changes. That's a life changer. Prayer and meditation on children are life-changing things. They'll change your life. They will change your child's life, because you've taken the time to really stop and ask for help, ask source for help. So it's huge. So take the time to do that. This is a journey. Don't be worried if you're not where everybody else is. Take your time. Like I said, every child is different. And people often ask me, I'll cover this really quick, when should I worry? When should I worry that there's something wrong? When should I worry about backwards letters? Honestly, backwards letters are not, yes, it's one indicator for things like dyslexia, but it's not the only indicator. Jacob spelled his name, because his last name, or his name ends with a B. He put the B was backwards probably until he was 10. And then I was like, dude, come on. And he's like, okay. So then he would go back and fix it. So I just, when you know that they see it, I just underline it in their writing and make them fix it. And then they'll get the repetition of it and they'll stop. Often there, like I said, there's one letter, maybe a handful of letters that are a struggle for them. Is not an indicator that there's something wrong. It's just an indicator that they're a human being, and there's 26 freaking letters in the alphabet, and that's a lot. And that's a lot to take in, and it takes time, and it takes repetition, and it takes doing it over and over again before that they really realize that these things have to be in place. How long should I read with my child who gets easily frustrated? You might try 5-minute increments, Jenny, and just say, because I try to do 20 minutes overall, but if they're getting really frustrated, then I would say 5 minutes after breakfast, 5 minutes after lunch, 5 minutes before bed, or something like that, depending on how tired they are before bed. But trying to stretch that out, and then work up from there. And then once you see that you can go to 7 minutes and then 10 minutes, then drop one of them. And then you're, sort of gather them that way. But with regards to, when do you need help? When they're 9 and 10 years old and they're refusing to read, there's a difference between refusing and struggling. So really examine that. I work with a couple of moms that have, excuse me, kids that have some severe disabilities and some severe struggles. And so that would be something that you'll notice, because it's not just reading that they're struggling with. You know, if they're having other sequencing issues in other areas, or they're having struggles with remembering other things. So really take your time, and I would say, honestly, I don't worry. Even until I didn't really, even though Ellie was late, I didn't worry about her really. My ex-husband worried about her, but I didn't. I knew that it would come. I knew that she was the third child that I was teaching to read, and I knew that it would come. It was just progress every day, because if I hadn't done that every day, work, I know it would not have done, it would not have gone as well as it did. So if you've got a child that's struggling, you need to ask yourself, am I putting in the time every single day? And if you're not, then don't sort of put that on the child at this point. It needs to be on you. You hold the responsibility of that until they are reading on their own. So, but with regards to reading struggles, it's really fairly rare. It's fairly rare. So somebody asked here, how do you know if the backwards letters are an issue? Honestly, like I said, it's one indicator. It's not people put too much on that. You know, I think that in the 70s and 80s, it was dyslexia, everything. And I'll tell you a secret. I have dyslexia. I have dyslexia that manifests in reading comprehension issues, which is why I was so well read on Steiner, because I had to read him over and over and over again. But when it comes to knowing when the backward stuff is an issue, you'll see it in other places. So like I said, I had a son that was, he was 10, and it wasn't until then that I finally was able to break him, because often it's a habit, break him of putting his B's backwards. And his name was Jacob, and the B was always backwards. And yeah, that was really cute when he was little. It was not cute. And that's when I said, dude, it's not cute now. You need to fix it. And so really being conscious of seeing which things are maybe habitual, like things that are happening all the time in their writing, and look at their writing, look at all of their writing as a sample, and go, okay, I see that the B is backwards here, but it's not backwards there. Or, you know, that the other letters that are flipped around, the J for my son Jacob was often backwards in the early days. And so it's about paying attention to those things. I do not think that's an indicator of there being something wrong. That's when you work at things. You look at things, and I would just go through their writing, and like I said, just underline where there's a problem. And then when you hand it back to them, you just say, I need you to fix some things. And have them fix them. I don't worry a whole lot about a first grader, because they're going to make mistakes. They're learning. They're learning about all these letters. Like I said, there's 26 of them. There's a lot. And so that's a lot of process and a lot of remembering that they have to do. So I don't worry in first grade. I might in first grade go, oh, look at the J's backwards. I'm going to fix that for you. And then just fix it for them. But when it comes to second grade and third grade and they're building after that, then you can say, oh, why don't you go grab our letter chart that we made over there and look at the things that I underlined and see if you can fix those for yourself. So I do that as they get older. We have usually an alphabet chart that's just so that they can remember how to make the shapes of the letters. And so I might put that in our on the chalkboard, or because I don't have a chalkboard these days, I'll have it on a piece of paper and just have it with their writing, where they're doing their writing, just in case they need to remember. I do the same thing with cursive. You know, Sam's in fifth grade, and he'll grab the cursive cheat sheet every now and again if he can't remember how one letter is joined to the other letter. And so, you know, it's this process of learning. And I think what we do as moms is we get so frustrated because we don't think it's going fast enough that we forget that it's a process. We forget that it takes time, and we forget that we need to have patience with them, that that's why we're doing this, that we're not being forced to homeschool, that we're homeschooling because we want to and because we love these children. So anyway, there's about a million other videos that could go along with that. Agent or object, you know, a whole bunch of other ones. If you're struggling with remembering why you're doing this, run and listen to some of those other videos, because I think they'll be helpful to you. Okay, I think that's all. We have talked for a long time about reading. If you have any questions after, please drop them in the comments. I'm happy to answer them. If you're watching this on YouTube later, I answer comments here. So please just go ahead and let me know if you've got questions. You can always email me at waldorfessentials@gmail.com or drop me a PM as well. So I hope you guys have a great day.